Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I am Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great and glad that I don't yet need bathtub Viagra.
We're going to talk about it. I don't think it's necessarily like a question of impotence.
No, it isn't simply. It's more of a intoxicant, really.
It's a weird thing. We're going to get into it. Before we go, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. We remain ad-free because of our support from there. It is patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. We encourage everyone to go check it out. For only $2 a month, you can gain access to all of our bonus material. We get reviews of new episodes as they come out. I write a little piece every single week. Me and Matt record bonus episodes monthly. We're within sight of going to 2 bonus episodes a month. Our next bonus episode is going to be about John Swartzwelder's first published book. It's fiction. No new donors to thank this week, but we do encourage you guys, please check it out. Also, we are now on Google Play Music. It took Google 10 years, but they finally decided that podcasts are a thing that's worthy of their time and investment.
Sure, it was very difficult for them.
I guess it was. But we are on there. If you're an Android user, I guess check
or
it out.
iOS.
Is it on iOS too?
Yes, of course. Anyone who can access Google Play Music.
Pretty much anybody. No one on Apple uses Google Play though, do they?
If they subscribe to this YouTube Red and get the streaming service for free.
Oh, it comes with YouTube Red? I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, podcasts are free. Whatever. If it is, I guess if you're on there, check it out. Let us know if it's good or not. I think the same goes for iTunes and Stitcher and all those other podcast services. Rate, review, subscribe to us on there. If you use that service, give us a good review.
To us,
you heard me. Mm-hmm. Let us know how it works. Do you use that, Matt?
Use which one?
Google Play Music.
I use it to listen to my own music that I have uploaded, but I don't use it for podcasts. I use Pocket Casts.
Is it a good app?
A fantastic app. Beautiful. Works great. Don't use it for podcasts.
Oh, all right, is that a command?
No, I'm saying I don't use it for podcasts.
Oh, okay. But yeah, same goes for iTunes and all those places. Please leave us a good review and 5 stars, all that helps us out. We really appreciate it. This week's episode is Grandpa vs. Sexual Inadequacy, episode 207, originally aired December 4th, 1994, written by Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, directed by David Merkin. Finished 58th in the ratings with a Nielsen rating of 9.5, third highest ratio on Fox that week. Don't know what beat it.
Yeah, something terrible, I'm sure.
I'm sure you would have liked the television shows that were on Fox. I mean, you like Married with Children, don't you, Matt?
I do enjoy Married with Children. I'm a little more okay if that beats The Simpsons, because I figure it was neck and neck. But if something like 90210 or Melrose Place,
They're just dramas. What's wrong with dramas?
They're boring. Nobody ever laughs in Fox dramas.
Chalkboard gag.
It's like DC made a bunch of dramas in the 90s.
Oh no. The chalkboard gag. My homework was not stolen by a one-armed man. I'm always.
Or was it?
I'm always there for a good fugitive reference. The couch gag. Family runs past a repeating background of the living room, like an old cartoon.
Yep. This is a repeat, right? Repeat couch gag?
I don't think so. I think this is the first time we've seen this one, yeah.
Wow.
There's been other cartoon, old-timey cartoon references in the couch gags before, but I believe this is the first time we've seen this one.
Gotcha.
And it's early on in the season. Generally, you don't see. They only repeat them within each season.
Uh-huh.
By the end of this season, we might see this again. Episode guest stars Phil Hartman as Troy McClure in a relatively small bit, but you know, still does an excellent job. And speaking of Troy McClure, the episode begins with the $1,000 movie. I think the title is Good Time Slim and the Great Frisco Freakout. Is that right?
Indeed it is.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Oh, yes. It is ripping off Bullet and other movies of that ilk, with starring Troy McClure. Homer's watching it, enjoying his time late at night, watching a terrible movie that he's only seen twice before, I believe is what he says.
I believe so, yeah.
Twice before?
I think it's twice before. But Marge is more interested in quote-unquote snuggling.
Please, Marge, how often can I see a movie of this caliber on late-night TV?
Is there something wrong, honey?
No, it's just that I've only seen this movie twice before, and I've seen seen you every night for the last 11 years. What I meant to say is, we'll snuggle tomorrow, sweetie. I promise.
Twice before. Audio confirms.
It's very important that a movie you see for the third time is why you do not make love to your wife. Good job.
I'm going to say this right now. I don't understand this trope. Like, you see it. And we just mentioned Married with Children. Same trope. Peggy is oftentimes interested in sex in Married with Children. And Al Bundy says no thank you. And in this same time, Homer is also like, no thanks. I guess he's not that much older than us, Homer is.
That's true. And I feel like, at least in the Homer-Marge relationship, Homer is shown as being still very attracted to Marge. It'd be more understanding if Marge didn't want to have sex with Homer. But yeah, I don't really know why that's the case. I know in Married with Children that they always put it down to Al being essentially bored of Peggy. He's done what he needs to do with her and is tired of it. But I don't see why Homer and Marge would be that way. It's just odd.
I mean, you peg it down to just married life, and they have kids. As we see shortly, children do make it more complicated. We get a brief montage of the reasons that quote unquote the snuggling is postponed. Homer is at one time has eaten too many enchiladas, which I can understand it in that occasion. You know, if you're stuffed full of enchiladas, maybe you're not too much in the mood. But they are just about to get ready to get down to business when Bart bursts into their room.
Mom, Dad!
Don't turn on the light!
There's a UFO outside my window! Seriously!
Oh, Bart, it's just an old golf umbrella stuck in a tree.
Can I sleep in there with you guys tonight?
No.
Can I sit on the roof with a baseball bat in case a UFO does come?
Yes, that's fine. Good. I hope you kept the homie fires burning. Homer.
Huh?
Homer, wake up.
What?
We need to talk about the marital difficulties we've been having lately.
Marge, there's just too much pressure. What with my job, the kids, traffic snarls, political strife at home and abroad. But I promise you, the second all those things go away, we'll have sex.
I simply can't wait that long. Maybe we should get some help. How about a book?
Ooh, okay.
A tasteful book.
Oh, all right.
I had to include Bart falling off the roof.
Yeah, that's the important part.
But I guess it kind of gets to the root. It seems boredom is a part of it, especially. Yeah. But I do want to mention the Bart suddenly, like, that is ostensibly the B plot of this story, is the kids, like,
being crazy,
like digging into conspiracy theories. And apparently, Bill Oakley had gone through this. Him saying that he went through a phase as a child where he was completely obsessed with conspiracies. I can see eye to eye to that. Preteen, I was like, I went through a phase where I'm like, oh, I wanted every book about the JFK assassination, you know, and all that.
Interesting choice.
I
was more into the X-Files kind of conspiracies, but I think every preteen and a teenager tends to go through that when they're looking to get an edge over everyone else in the knowledge department.
There was the grassy knoll. There's a second shooter. That's all I'm saying. Did we catch a name of that bookstore?
I did not know.
Okay, I can't remember it either. I know it's a good, of course, it's a sign gag that I've forgotten. But we get a little insight into the different tastes of the Simpsons. Bart buys a book about UFOs, you know, to read up on his sudden fear. Lisa buys Al Gore's book, which Al Gore receives a notification from the Pentagon, I guess?
Well, essentially, it looks like there's some kind of system that every time the book is scanned, the information is immediately recorded in the White House, which is where Al Gore was at that point.
He was. And he celebrated.
Indeed, he did, with the best music ever.
Celebrate good times. You mentioned the X-Files. We get a little bit of an X-Files-esque musical cue
Yeah.
Along with that. Homer and Marge settle on an audiobook from Paul Harvey.
Yeah, that is the weirdest choice.
Mr. for and Mrs. Erotic American. It is indeed. But, you know, they go through, they listen to the audiobook together, and they go through the different suggestions, and we're kind of going on the strip with them. They take a bath together in a, like, all normal bathtubs, way too small.
Way too small way for two people.
Too small for two people. Like
two adults, I guess.
Yes, two adults, much too small. They are left in the dark. They decide to go to the Aphrodite Inn, which is a, I don't know how, it's hard to describe what it is. It's like a hotel. Yeah,
it's kind of like a Japanese love hotel, but the American version, which is crappier.
I had seen a reference to the actual place it is, and then I forgot, oh, Madonna Inn, which was in California, in St. Louis Obispo in 1958. They were given unusual names, such as the rooms in the inn were given unusual names, such as the Yahoo, Love Nest, Old Mill, Kona Rock, Irish Hills, Cloud Nine, Just Heaven, Hearts and Flowers, Rock Bottom, Austrian Suite, Cabin Still, Old World Suite, Caveman Room, there you go, Elegance, Daisy May, Safari Room, Highway Suite, Jungle Rock, American Home, Bridal Falls, and the Karin, C-A-R-I-N. Korean? I don't know what that is. There you go. Caveman Room is a directly taken from the actual place, the Madonna Inn. Is this place still in business? Opening.
You're far more curious about this than I ever would be.
It's interesting, is it not? You're not interested?
I'm interested now that you bring it up.
It has a website too, madonnainn.com. It's a landmark, I guess now. I guess yes, it's more of a resort thing now than it is necessarily like a love nest, although it probably still has some of that connotation. But they go there and they are full up, except they have one particular room that is empty.
Oh, here we are, the utility room.
This isn't very ironic. I think it's an actual utility room.
No, honey. It's a romantic fantasy. I imagine I'm the janitor and you're the janitor's wife who has to live with me in the utility room.
Don't mind me, folks. Just need to get the old wet dry back.
Sexy times in the utility room.
Yeah, to which somebody else has a key. That's not creepy at all.
Matt, I hate to break this to you. Every room in a hotel, someone else has the key.
What? I thought they gave me the only key. No. Now I'm terrified of hotels. Way to go.
I know. I'm the bearer of bad news, but every hotel has multiple keys for your room. They could come in. They could come in anytime they wanted if they really wanted to. So that does not work. They drive over the book on tape multiple times on their way out from the Aphrodite Inn, upset. they get home, and Grandpa is curious about what is wrong.
Welcome home, son. I broke two lamps and lost all your mail. What's wrong with your wife?
Never mind. You wouldn't understand.
Flu?
No.
Protein deficiency?
No.
New mono ultra microscopic silico volcanoconiosis?
No.
Unsatisfying sex life?
Yes. But please, don't you say that word.
What? Sex? What's so unappealing about hearing your elderly father talk about sex? I had sex.
I think it doesn't matter how old you are. At a certain point, hearing your parents talk about sex is always uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It doesn't,
it's terrifying.
It doesn't matter. I am 30 years old. I don't want to hear my parents talk about sex whatsoever. The word that Grandpa uses, pneumonia ultra microscopic silica volcanica neoniosis, is the longest word in the English language published in a dictionary. It is a form of occupational lung disease caused by inhalation of crystalline silica dust.
Interesting.
There, I'm just putting it out there. Homer takes Grandpa home to the home and
to the home,
and Grandpa decides to take upon himself to give Homer, I guess, what is basically like a home remedy for their ailing sex life. All of the ingredients he has in his medicine cabinet, some of which look like colognes and other Like, not things you eat or drink, but...
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. I don't think I can make out any of the names of any of the stuff that he mixes in his sink. But he mixes in the sink, throws it in a bottle that he has handy, just a glass bottle hanging around, and he throws it to Homer as Homer is about to leave. Homer drinks it and is immediately...
Motivated.
Good word, Matt. Good vocabulary for this situation, because it's not necessarily clear what this nest actually does. Provides motivation. Because I don't think this is a question of, like, desire necessarily, but whatever this thing does, it makes people want to have sex. Somehow. Homer rushes home and immediately ushers the kids out of the house, gives them money to go see a movie.
And then take a cab to their aunt's.
Yes, and then immediately woos Marge and carries her up into the bedroom. And we are presented a stock footage festival that the kids are watching, which is various metaphors for intercourse. Trains entering tunnels, hot dogs rolling off conveyor belts. I'm not sure what that is supposed to represent, that's a unique maneuver, I guess. The hot dog on a conveyor belt.
Never
heard that one. That's when we go to commercial, I believe.
And it comes back in a terrifying way. Not really. When we come back, Homer and Marge are. I believe it's called basking in the afterglow. Homer shaves and immediately gets his 5 o'clock shadow back. Marge is in some sort of, I hate to call it a negligee because it's not really that skimpy. It's just
lingerie.
It's not really lingerie though. It's because it covers like all of her. Like you can't even see the shape, the outline of her body.
That can still be lingerie. It doesn't have to be form fitting.
Fair enough, I guess. Marge calls him Rex Harrison, Paul Anka rolled into one. Which, if those are who Marge considers sexy,
we've established that Marge. I mean, she was a child of the '60s. Those are perfectly age appropriate people for her to like, still have crushes on.
I guess so, because that's just. I don't even know who Rex Harrison is.
Who's a pop star?
Oh, okay,
British. Well,
that makes more sense.
British pop star.
All right, basically. Homer and Marge are very excited about what has transpired, and Marge actually encourages Homer to spend more time with Grandpa, despite his New Year's resolution. And she suggests that they go into business together and bottle the tonic to make money. And once Marge mentions money, Homer is all in. He goes straight to Grandpa, and they start brewing more and more in his bathtub. Which I can only imagine how disgusting that is, but that's how they do it.
I do want to correct myself. Rex Harrison, actor, not necessarily pop star. But
gotcha. Fair enough.
It again, I think it still was suitable for Marge's love interest. I always drink stuff from bathtubs.
That's true. Do you drink your own bath water?
I don't take baths.
Do you make bathtub gin?
I buy my gin at a liquor store.
So what are you drinking out of bathtubs then?
I can't.
Do you make sangria in your bathtub?
I can't talk about it on the air, Matt. I might get in trouble.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not, I don't, you know, I don't.
We'll wanna, set that aside for a I later
plead,
conversation.
I plead there. The fifth. How about that? I plead the fifth.
All right. Homer and Grandpa name it Simpson and Son Revitalizing Tonic, get a nice stick-on label. And they try to sell it at the mall, where Homer is revealed to be pretty much the worst salesman possible. He basically accosts a man and calls him a bad lover. I believe his exact words are, "You look like a man who has trouble satisfying his wife."
That's the best thing to do when you're trying to sell something, is insult people.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm sure Homer is completely oblivious to this. But luckily for him, Grandpa turns out to be the greatest carny barker ever.
And witness the magnificent medicinal miracle of Simpson and Son's patented revitalizing tonic. Put some honor in your larder with our energizing, moisturizing, tantalizing, romanticizing, surprising, herprizing, revitalizing tonic.
And as you can hear, people respond to that particular pitch by Grandpa. Professor Frink is there and immediately proceeds to test the elixir to see whether it's because he doesn't believe that it can have so many incredible properties, and immediately turns into Robbie has in the notes here, Buddy Love. So for those of you who remember the Nutty Professor, that's essentially right. However, he gets the slick back hair, his lisp and weird vocal inflections are gone, and his lady scientist is immediately enamored, and they go off to have a wild wingding at the cyclotron.
Sounds like a good time to me.
It does. Yay, cyclotrons. We then see everyone else trying it, including a bunch of strangers. And we also see Dr. Hibbert, who has discovered that it is, in fact, a mild form of poisoning. That's apparently what's going on. But he downs it anyway, because apparently it just worked.
Doesn't alcohol a mild poison as well?
Indeed it is. There are lots of things we take that are mild poisons. Antibiotics are technically a poison because it kills a lot of things in your body. So I guess it's just normal. Maybe it even has alcohol in it.
I'm assuming it has a good amount of alcohol in it.
That's true, guy. I doubt it's water-based.
From all that stuff that's in Grandpa's medicine cabinet, I'm assuming most of that stuff has some percentage of alcohol in it.
It looks like, among other things, cologne and mouthwash, both of which tend to have alcohol in them.
Yes.
So it's probably heavily alcoholic at least. But the rest of the town is completely bare. The kids are out playing in the streets because there's no cars, because no one is out driving. All the adults have been consumed with passion. We then see Bart and Milhouse and Lisa. They are basically, at this point, just throwing wild theories about what's going on.
Unexplainable behavior. Individuals acting in a secretive fashion are often involved with UFOs or other paranormal phenomena, e.g. telephone explosions.
Jeez, if it's in a book, it's gotta be true.
Scary, no? And this guy's head of the Spaceology Department at the Correspondence College of Tampa.
Ah, that wonderful institution, the Correspondence College of Tampa.
I lived in Tampa for a fair stretch of time and was not aware of the Correspondence College of Tampa. Maybe I should
have. Are you sure? Wasn't it that big building, just down by the river? Full of chemicals and runoff?
I think that's the Scientologists' headquarters?
No, that one. Oh,
That's in Clearwater, but, I mean, that's Tampa.
It's close enough.
Tampa.
So what you're saying is that building is even less credible than the Correspondence College of Tampa. Gotcha.
Listen, all you Scientologist lawyers out there, I do not endorse or agree with Matt's sentiments about Scientology. You're a perfectly cromulent religion.
Mm-hmm.
Hail Xenu,
mm-hmm.
or something, right?
That's I think it's something along those lines.
that's what they do.
Uh-huh.
I love, but
media protections.
Shadow people. You gotta watch out for those shadow people, Matt.
That's true. They're coming to get you. Once Homer and Marge have once again inflamed their passions, Homer and Grandpa go on tour of the crappiest towns anywhere around Springfield. They begin their tour in Spittle County, and it appears they're basically hitting the county fair circuit, which is terrifying at the very least. They're selling it for $1 a bottle, which I can't imagine those ingredients they're using are that cheap. So I don't know how they're selling it for $1 a bottle unless they don't understand how profit works, which is a distinct possibility when Homer's involved.
I mean, maybe it's, who knows? Maybe it is less than $1 a bottle. I mean, if you buy enough of all that crap that Grandpa had into large enough.
They bought the bulk containers.
Yeah, they went to Costco and Sam's Club. Sure.
Fair enough. So at their very first stop, they are still refining their pitch. Grandpa starts to give his existing pitch and then attempts to bring up a testimonial from the audience, who turns out to be Homer. And that leads to a interesting scene.
May I have a volunteer from the audience? Yes, you, sir. Now, sir, you've never seen me before. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, then how come his face is on the bottle?
You're the worst deal I've ever seen. You're a disgrace to the medicine show business.
They didn't start chasing us until you turned on that getaway music.
Sorry, that's just funny to me that they chased them because they turned on the music. As soon as they turned on the music off, they stopped being chased.
That is the Foggy Mountain Breakdown.
Is that really? That's a real song.
Hmm. Yep. It was recorded in 1949 by Flat and Scruggs and the Foggy Mountain Boys.
You are just full of incredibly useful information.
That's what everyone tells me, Matt. Everyone tells me every time I tell them something, they're like, wow, that is incredibly useful. Thank you for enlightening me.
Anyway, back at home, the kids are still trying to figure out what's going on. Bart is essentially spying on the whole town from his treehouse, and they have a absolutely wonderful discussion with Lisa piping in towards the end.
Okay, it's now painfully clear. The adults are definitely paving the way for an invasion by the saucer people.
You fool! Can't you see it's a massive government conspiracy? Or have they gotten to you, too?
Conclusions. Haven't you ever heard of Occam's razor? The simplest explanation is probably the correct one.
So what's the simplest explanation?
I don't know. Maybe they're all reverse vampires and they have to get home before dark.
Reverse vampire!
Oh, poor Lisa.
Yeah, it's she's hanging out, but it's pretty clear that she's dismissing most of this stuff out of hand, which is, you know, the correct response, honestly. I mean, it's
Occam's razor. It's the one thing stupid people can't get a hand on.
It's very consistent with Lisa's character, though. She is a skeptic.
So while they're out on tour, Grandpa and Homer apparently drive past Amos Pearson's Moose Farm, which I don't know if he was referring to his old house or that was next door to his old house.
It was. I'm fairly certain it's a landmark on the way to their old house. That although I don't, can you raise moose?
I don't believe so. I believe that's part of the joke. Is Amos Pearson a weird name or something?
I don't. There are moose farms.
But I feel like those would have to be like giant areas of land that you can't really farm them. You can just give them and you can just try and provide them with land to live on. I feel like it'd be really hard to, like, they're not domesticated, so you can't really farm them.
Russia has tried really, really hard. A brief Google search has told me that Russia has really, they've failed, but they really have tried to domesticate moose.
Well, maybe in the future they will succeed and we'll go back and laugh at this particular joke. Of course there's a moose farm.
Well, they've been trying for 70 years. I'm not sure if they're going to ever really get there. But
domestication takes thousands of years, so we're just starting.
I mean, that is, you know, you have to have really good long-term planning, I guess, if you're going to domesticate a moose.
Exactly. But the Moose Farm, I guess, as we just determined, was a landmark to where they go to the house where Homer grew up. He apparently planted a hot dog tree that never grew, unfortunately. But apparently the bank foreclosed in 63 because the cows started giving sour milk after Homer scared the crap out of them. Possibly, literally, we don't know. Basically, they both start reminiscing about their lives there. They had a television, the Radiation King, that Homer would park himself on for hours, and we see a nice, what I'm guessing is a reference to the shadows of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where people were hit by the atomic bomb and left outlines of themselves. Essentially, Homer's shadow is burned in the same way at the wall, which is terrifying at best. I guess that's why they called it the Radiation King. But Homer, in the flashback, we see Homer listening to a speech by JFK, and he goes to his parents and starts talking like JFK and says that, oh, I can be president. But Grandpa sets him straight.
Look at me, Mom. I am President Kennedy.
Oh, Abe. Maybe our Homer could grow up to be president someday.
You, President? This is the greatest country in the world. We've got a whole system set up to keep people like you from ever becoming president. Quit your daydreaming, Melonhead! Quit your daydreaming, Melonhead!
Grandpa. Apparently he's never changed. At this point, Homer starts to yell at Grandpa for never encouraging him, and Grandpa yells back saying that he was a disappointment. And when they start to leave, basically, the gist of the argument is that Grandpa Homer was only born because Grandpa took the tonic, and if he hadn't, maybe Homer wouldn't have been born and Grandpa would have been happy, which is an awful thing to say to a child, even if it's true. At that point, Homer gets incredibly mad, forces Grandpa out of the vehicle, and then leaves him there on the side of the road. Of course, poor Grandpa tries to remember his army training to survive, but fails, and we go to a commercial.
It takes a, wow. He it, like time like hours pass and he can't remember his training.
Well, that's how we know he forgot. He tried.
He really did try. We also learn in that scene that Homer is 38 years old. Although that has that changes as the show goes from different writers who lose track of how exactly old Homer is. But
they eventually settle on, I believe, 39. Right?
I thought it was 36.
36. That makes sense. See, even we don't know because it changes so much.
Well, it does change a lot. It's 36. It is currently 36.
Okay.
Initially 34. They changed it to 38. Now he's currently 36. They split the difference, I guess. When we pick up, Grandpa is trying to apologize to Homer, you know, but he first by shoving flowers, a bouquet, through the mail slot on the Simpsons door. Homer has kind of... We see this a lot. Homer has hurt feelings, and Marge is kind of frank with him about how long this is going to go on.
Homie, are you really going to ignore Grandpa for the rest of your life?
Of course not, Marge. Just for the rest of his life. He said I was an accident. He didn't want to have me.
You didn't want to have Bart.
I know, but you're never supposed to tell the child.
You tell Bart all the time. You told him this morning.
But when I do it, it's cute.
Yes, that's the way that works.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, like, this is what this episode is kind of getting at, you know, in a roundabout way, is that, you know, Homer and Marge are baby boomers, and they are struggling about how to raise their children. And Homer is kind of, like, he's angry about how his father raised him. You know, he's upset that his father didn't encourage him more or didn't, you know, maybe if he had raised him differently, Homer could have done more with his life. Mm. But he's realizing that he is much like his father, struggling with this. He's not, you know, he's flying by the seat of his pants much. And I think that's the long lesson on this is, like, it doesn't, like, generational gaps are kind of imaginary for the most part. We're all kind of just trying to figure things out. Kids or no kids.
So that is accurate.
Yeah.
And basically, the errors of the past do come around again, essentially. Basically, if your parents are not encouraging to you, there's a good chance you won't be that way to your kids. That's not always true, but most of the time, that's true.
And Homer kind of reacts to this in that he's like, okay, well, I'm resentful towards my father because of how, you know, how he acted towards me, how he wasn't necessarily supportive. I'm going to try and be supportive of my children. So he tries to make up for that. In the meantime, we get the children are laying out their conspiracy theory fully.
So finally, we're all in agreement about what's going on with the adults. Millhouse. Okay, here's what we've got. The Rand Corporation, in conjunction with the Saucer People.
Thank you.
Under the supervision of the Reverse Vampires. Are forcing our parents to go to bed early in a fiendish plot to eliminate the meal of dinner. We're through the looking glass here, people.
That sound effect slays me every time.
Do you know what that's from?
Some terrible 80s movie. It has to be like, I would love to capture just that sound effect so I can play it when I'm trying to make an important point, like at work or what I'm yelling at you.
Brown. It's very similar to like the modern movie, like superhero, like Hans Zimmer-esque, you know, sounds they use a lot, like Transformers or Batman, mm-hmm. like those be just like boom noises. It does make things seem very important. Grandpa is continuing to try and still sell his tonic, but he is using Barney as a stand-in for Homer as his ostensibly his son. It fails badly because people quickly go, "Why isn't Barney on the label? Who is that other guy?" And it fails. And Barney's not a great.
Plus, it gives him a lot of gas.
That's true, but I mean. Can't help it. Some people would have just, I mean, their digestion just works differently. And we cut back to Homer. He is trying to do his best to make up for Grandpa's lack of parenting by paying extra attention to both Bart and Lisa.
Number one, I know how to ride a bike. Number two, I already own a bike. And number three, that is a girl's bike.
You're no girl. You're a boy. A good boy. You can be president. Scratch that. You will be president.
Dad!
I think Lisa needs another push on her new tire swing.
No, Dad. I want to get down. This tire is filthy and the steel belts are poking me.
Whee!
No!
Whee!
No offense, Homer, but your half-assed underparenting was a lot more fun than your half-assed overparenting.
But I'm using my whole ass.
Dad, it's just that too much of your love can really be scary.
Someday you'll thank me for all this scary love. But now I've got to go somewhere and do some serious thinking.
The fact that Lisa's just saying straight out, Homer's love can be scary.
Yeah,
it's really
accurate.
It's very accurate. We've already Homer loves Flanders. There you go. There's a classic example of that. And Homer trying to be a great parent is not like even the kids are like we're not necessarily a fan of this. Homer goes back to their old farmhouse and is kind of lamenting his plight. About the situation he's in, his relationship with his father, with Grandpa, and until he finds a picture of him at Christmas with Santa Claus, and then he quickly realizes that Grandpa is Santa. That his dad, Homer, is not too bright, so I can understand why he never realized this before. I don't know if there's ever a time in my life when I would not have recognized my father in a Santa costume.
I don't know. Maybe when you were really young, like, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe?
I don't know. You know your parents pretty well when you're a 4-year-old kid. Like, they're the only people you see.
That's true, but I mean, if they put on a beard and a hat and clothes you're not used to seeing them in, I feel like...
How old is Homer in that picture?
How old is Homer?
How old
is he? I would say probably 4 or 5.
Okay, Homer, I could understand not recognizing. Homer was not.
It's true. Homer is extra dumb.
He's not a smart guy. But
also, this also depends if it was before or after he shoved the crayon in his nose.
Continuity is difficult. He accidentally sets the photo on fire and then the rest of the house on fire. And then we cut over to the other side of the house where Grandpa is also angry. He's angry at the tonic itself. Because of that, it is. Set him on this path of kind of despair, even. He throws angrily the tonic into the fire, and I think this basically confirms that there's a very high percentage of alcohol in this thing, because it explodes like a Molotov cocktail.
Yeah.
And that also sets the house on fire. And they both run from the house before running into each other.
Dad! Dad! I'm a screw-up. I burned down our house.
No, I'm a screw-up. I burned down our house.
You know what?
What?
We're both screw-ups.
It doesn't matter. What matters is you were right when you told me I never said anything nice about you.
No? Are you gonna say something nice now?
Well, I hadn't thought that far ahead. Okay, here it goes. I'm not sorry I had you, son. I was always proud that you weren't a short man.
Aw, Dad.
What do you say we roll on the grass, son?
I'm with you, Dad.
And that's how the episode ends, with...
Which is a sweet way to end it, but...
No? You didn't like it, Matt?
It was... I don't know. It's kind of depressing. I do feel the ending is a good way to end it. It just seems a little... I feel like Homer didn't really learn anything. I feel like they could have spent an extra 30 seconds showing him trying to be better to his kids, but...
I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah, that's true.
That it's cyclical, and that he's, I think the point is that I don't think Grandpa ever, when he was raising a Homer, that he ever went and gone, you know, even maybe even thought about if, you know, I think he thought about being a bad parent, but I don't, you know, I think every parent kind of goes through that dilemma at a certain extent. Mm-hmm. especially as I think that is, it is in particular a more relevant issue to a middle-class family like The Simpsons. I think that, you know, Grandpa and Mother Simpson, Mona, how well off were they? I have a feeling that they weren't. Were they middle class or were they poorer?
I feel like they were poorer because
it seems,
I mean,
like
their house looked okay because Patty and Selma shared a room, but they also hung out at a cornfield at one point. And I don't think her mom worked and her dad was a flight attendant. So
no, Marge, but no, The Simpsons, Mona and Grandpa.
Oh, Mona and Grandpa. Oh, sorry. For some reason, I was thinking Marge's parents. I mean, I don't think Mona worked and Grandpa was, what, a night watchman at a cranberry silo? So I can't imagine they had that much money.
He was also in the military.
For a while, yeah, that's right.
I don't, like, it seemed like they were the top of, like, lower class, as we would call it. But
I would think so, yeah. Or the very bottom of the middle class.
Yeah, and I think, like, Homer has stepped up, like, he's gone a step up, basically. You know, he's mm-hmm. lower, upper, middle, like middle. They've changed it a million, you know, that's a joke at this point about how, you know, what level of the middle class the Simpsons are at. But I think that I think it's particularly relevant to baby boomers and us in particular, like as, you know, culture has progressed and generations have passed on, you know, we are not as concerned with day-to-day, like, survival. You know, and because right. survival is not the tantamount issue in our lives anymore, at least if you are a middle class family like The Simpsons are, like the families that they portray, that they are often played against from the sitcom families of the 60s, 70s, 80s, parenting and how you parent your children became more of an important issue, became more focused on because they were relatively comfortable in their life. You know, they didn't have to worry about where their next meal was coming from necessarily, especially as the show has gone on. They don't even concern themselves with that much anymore about their, you know, making a budget or anything like that. So I think the show is, in this episode, really showing that Homer is becoming self-aware of this issue because of that fact. Because Grandpa maybe was, you know, because of the fact they were necessarily struggling with their income. Or with their lifestyle or whatever, you know, how well you're raising your child is not necessarily the top. You're more worried about feeding your child than necessarily, or if they're going to become president or not. And Homer and Marge are, because of their class status, because of how much money Homer makes, you know, they seem relatively stable, aside from specific episodes where they need them not to be. Mm-hmm. It is an issue, and I think that is what this episode's kind of saying. You know, that Homer is not necessarily a good parent all the time. He is trying as hard as he's trying. You know, and that's kind of what this, like, it is. He's just, and I think that's all, that he's not necessarily that different from his father. You know, Grandpa was trying as well. He was doing the best he could. In hindsight, maybe he did bad stuff occasionally, but I think that's what the episode's saying. It's not necessarily, like, a sexy ending, though, but I think they...
True. So basically what you're trying to say is that because Grandpa had to spend more time scraping together to make sure that his kids got fed, he didn't have as much time to devote to being a better father. And Homer, who doesn't have to spend that much time doing that, should be doing a better job, but he doesn't know how. But at least he's trying.
Yeah, it's about awareness, honestly. Like, it's... I don't think that, you know, like, books about how to raise your kids properly was not a thing until basically the 60s and 70s. I mean, I'm sure they existed prior, but they were for the upper class, for the rich, you know?
Right.
They're like, here, this is how you raise a proper son or a proper daughter, you know, manners classes and all that kind of stuff. Practical guidebooks for child rearing, I don't think were widespread until relatively recently with the upspring of middle class. But I think it's a good episode. I mean, it's very funny. I like the interplay with Grandpa and Homer. Like, I like that interplay between the two, all that kind of stuff. I really like this episode.
I definitely like it. For once, and this is weird for me to say this, but I kind of wanted more of the B-plot of Bart and Lisa and Milhouse trying to figure out what was going on. Because, one, it's the kind of B-plot I like where it interacts with the A-plot, so it's not like a huge jump between the two. And it was just funny to hear all their theories. I would have liked to have maybe a minute or two of them like trying to test these theories sort of thing, just, you know, to add a couple more jokes into the episode. But, yeah, it was still a good episode.
We will rank it at the end of the show. No submissions for my favorite episode for this. If you have a certain episode that is your favorite, please submit it to SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. I get these in a lot of different places, and I try and get them all, collect them, but if they are not sent to the email, I can't guarantee it. I apologize if I ever miss any, but none for this episode. Our next segment is time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. Alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group archived on Google Groups about for the week or two after the episode debuted and see what people were talking about. Mixed reactions for this one, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like the kind of one that would be super polarizing.
No, there's arguments about what Occam's razor actually is, which, you know, that seems, how do you spell Occam? O-C-C-A-M?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. I'm looking at the spelling, and it seems like I'm spelling it wrong. But the original translation from the Latin of Occam's razor has been simplified over the years, which is kind of funny considering what it is. And finally, I came across a posting about, you know, we've discussed this for the past, you know, basically a couple seasons of the show about how episodes that we really, really love and are considered some of the best Simpsons ever are getting a lot of flack and anger and like really bad reviews on the news group. And I found a really interesting post about people reacting to that. Defenders of the show, like they're saying like, oh, like how basically over the, like we're in season six, the last few seasons, it has slowly kind of eked into more absurdist kind of comedy, less family necessarily, you know, something that you wouldn't necessarily see. You know, they're not realist all the time. It's more cartoony. And someone compares it to Monty Python, to the Flying Circus. Have you watched a lot of Flying Circus, Matt?
I have not, no.
It is spectacular. I have it all on DVD. It is a great sketch comedy show, but it is insane and doesn't have any rules. Anyone who out there who isn't, I mean, most people are familiar with some Monty Python, mostly probably Holy Grail or Life of Brian, the movies. I would certainly suggest going and catch the television show that started it, because it is still to this day kind of groundbreaking. It's like there's nothing else that has ever been like it. Even sketch comedy shows now still don't necessarily do what it did. But someone is responding to this. I'm just going to read this. It's really interesting. And they're responding to the person defending The Simpsons, saying it is like Monty Python. They're saying, this is exactly the problem. Monty Python was a sketch comedy show based on incongruity, breaking the rules of comedy, above all, total outrageousness. It didn't try to tell a story. It was a bunch of gags lashed together with bizarre links to real cartoons and fake BBC announcements. It didn't develop characters that you cared about. Simpsons is about reality. It took place in our universe today. Agreed the world that The Simpsons lived was maybe one step beyond what we have today, but it was a small step that you could believe in. Characters were dim-witted, but not outrageously stupid. Matt Groening described Homer as a lovable oaf. He wasn't too bright, but he always meant well and occasionally succeeded in spite of himself. I've always quoted Yerley Smith on the subject. I won't do it again. The point is that this was the family that might actually live next door. Today, Simpsons is about outrageous humor and postmodernist thought. Much as I like postmodernism. I don't like it when postmodernism invades and destroys something a lot of work went into building. Perhaps the closest show to The Simpsons I can think of is Newhart. Yes, it was filled with zany characters, but you never felt as the show was set on Mars. It was still Vermont today. The Simpsons has already left the planet. I think that is a good summation of a lot of these people's complaints.
I definitely agree, because we've talked about how The Simpsons at the beginning was lauded as an animated show that wasn't crazy. It was very grounded. And honestly, I'm trying to think about it, and I really think they're being pedantic, essentially. The Simpsons are still incredibly realistic, even now. I mean, there are a few episodes here and there where things have gotten really crazy, like when Kang and Kodos showed up in a non-Halloween episode. But for the most part, they're still heavily grounded in reality. I'm not really sure what they're pointing to, essentially. Like, why are they...
I mean, it's like, I think we talked about how crazy it was that Kate Fear is currently our number one episode, our best episode ever list. And, like, the things like Bob stepping on rakes for, you know, seemingly that's eternity. Not... That, I mean, that... It's not that it couldn't take place in our reality, is that it wouldn't. You know, is that they, you know, it's hard to deconstruct this argument because it is based on a lot of ideas. Like, The Simpsons certainly shifted their focus and became more absurdist, became more ridiculous as years went on. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I feel like that's the best strength of The Simpsons, of the show, is the fact that it can be incredibly grounded or incredibly insane. It can have Homer throwing a bomb mixed, you know, of Pop Rocks and Diet Soda and Buzz Cola, and it explodes like it's an action movie.
Fair enough.
I think that I'd be interested to see what these people think about what The Simpsons became versus what Family Guy is. Because that is what Family Guy is, man, to me.
They would hate Family Guy.
I mean, that's what Family Guy is. It is like a collection of scenes and references. It is not necessarily. It is not. It tells a story, but it is mostly concerned like, hey, we have an idea for a joke. Let's just put it in there, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense. Which is fine and good. But you know, I don't want to get into Family Guy. But I feel like that is the logical conclusion of all this long road. But I thought that was a very, like, it's a well thought out and well written response to why, at least, they have these complaints about the show. I don't mind the show changing necessarily as long as it's still good. I feel like what a lot of complaints about the non classic years of The Simpsons, that it didn't change enough. But regardless, I think it's interesting. Let's move on, Matt.
I like that idea.
It's time for our listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite media-related moment? I left this kind of open, and we got tons of great answers. I always appreciate you guys' answers. First from Isaac at Isaac is a good in. Arnie Pie in the Sky. You're not the time, Kent. You're not the time. Alice,
that's a weird one.
Sarcasm. Well, I like the weird ones. Those are the best ones to me. Alice at Sarcasm and Toast. Krusty's reaction to Workroom Parasite. The look on his face and, what the hell was that? Makes me laugh every single time. Daniel's answer at Veggie Duck. Damn you, Snow! Cody at Commander Cody 83. Kent Brockman and the Fluffy Kitten played with that ball of string all through the night. On a lighter note, murder. Will at Will's World MN. And I, for one, welcome our new insect overlords. From Aiden, from E Pluribus Wiggum, when they run an ad that describes Ralph as tough, getting hit by a steel beam, curious, following, and acting like a duck, smart on immigration, stranger danger, quotes Ralph, and smart in the economy. I have this much money is in my piggy bank. Anything with Ralph is good. Mike in Burns, Baby Burns, when Homer is initially shown getting gunned down outside the movie theater, then Kent reveals is one of several possible endings created by the news team. It's capped off with some great Foley work as they show Homer getting hit with a barrage of baseballs. Nick from Children of a Lesser Clod, quote from Arnie Pie, he's jumping out of the car, Kent. He's trying to climb over the fence. He's realizing he's too fat. He's digging a hole like a dog. Now he's giving up on that. He's running back and forth. He's climbing into a pipe and he appears to be stuck. His legs are dangling in a comical fashion. Oh, it's the saddest thing I've ever seen. Sean going with Homer the Vigilante and Kent Brockman's predictions of riots where everyone will crack open each other's skulls and feast on the oily goo inside. Shows the madness of the news during a pandemic. Chris, answer. Now at the risk of being unpopular, this reporter places the blame squarely on you, the viewers. Danielle's answer. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Democracy simply doesn't work. From Kent Brockman.
Yes.
Of course. Jeff, just miles from your doorstep, hundreds of men are given weapons and trained to kill. The government calls it the army. But a more alarmist name would be the Killbot Factory. It's good. I like that. Finally, from Alexander. Roads closed. Pipes frozen. Albinos virtually invisible. The weather service has upgraded Springfield's blizzard from winter wonderland to a class 3 kill storm.
It's good delivery. I like it. Good job.
I'm doing my best.
I really felt the kill storm.
Good. Matt, what's your answer?
I'm going to have to go with I'd like to welcome our new insect overlords, because it just shows how most of the media would immediately bow down to any condition as long as they keep their jobs.
2 weeks in a row, Matt, I agree with you. My answer is the same. I love that it is probably the most memeified Simpsons thing. You know, debatable, but it's still up there. But again, you're right. It is more appropriate than ever about our media and how it all works. Next week's question: what is your favorite sex-related moment?
Yep.
PG podcast, guys. We're PG podcast. Aww. I just want to remind you. Family show, relatively. Anything that's not, any words that are not on the show, I'm not going to read. Okay. But I will post that question on all our social media. Facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod. Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod. And you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod.com. All those links can be found easily at TheSimpsonsShow.com. If you know you don't want to type all that stuff in or try and search for somewhere, you can just go to our website, click on the little Facebook button or Twitter button or whatever. Next up, Matt, it is time for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each challenge each other to 3 trivia questions. 1 easy, 1 medium, 1 hard. Try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season, season 6. Whatever host doesn't win has to mow the other's lawn in their wife's Sunday best. Hopefully I win and we don't have to worry about if I have a lawn in Canada. But we will see. Matt, start us off. Give me an easy question.
All right, sir. Your easy question. What famous boy band visits Bart and his band in New Kids on the Block?
Oh, God. That episode's really bad.
It's awful.
Ugh, God. That's an easy question.
Yeah, sorry. I thought this was
really easy. It would probably be easier if I had watched the episode more than the one time. NSYNC.
You are correct, sir.
I mean, that's the first one that I would... Okay. Your easy question, Matt.
Okay.
These are all from separate vocations.
Ooh.
These are all taken from separate vocations. I wrote about it for our Patreon. Lisa steals what to get back at the school's authority figures?
The teacher's editions of the books.
That is correct. Medium question.
All right. Your medium question, sir. In Trilogy of Error, what is Lisa's robot named?
Trilogy of Error. I'm not even sure what episode that is.
I'll give you a hint. That is the episode where you see the story from 3 different perspectives.
Oh,
you see it from Bart, Lisa, and Homer's perspective.
Again, I think I've seen the episode maybe once or twice. Lisa's robot, Copernicus? Question mark?
Final answer.
Yes, it's wrong. That's fine.
Is Linguo.
Linguo, of course. I just went with a nerdy scientist thing.
Yeah.
Best guess. Okay, your medium question, Matt. What is the name of the standardized test the children take in separate vocations?
CANT, or Career Aptitude Normalizing Test.
How particular should I be on this answer?
All right, hold on. Let me think again.
Because you're,
in what way could I be wrong?
You're 98% there, and I kind of want to give it to you, but I also kind of don't want to mow your lawn in a dress. So.
I can't think of any way which I'd be wrong.
I'll give it to you. Career Aptitude Normalization Test.
Oh, man.
It's not...
I didn't even think you would care about the words. I thought you just want the acronym.
No. I want the words. I need all the need all the help I can get. But God, you're killing me. give me a medium question. Hard question.
Hard question. I don't think this is particularly hard, but it was in those seasons you don't really like. So
good. Great. Perfect.
What color crayon does Homer put in his brain in H-O-M-R?
Oh, I think I'm asking this question, actually, but I don't remember. Probably. Still. It's a blue, I think. I think it's a blue.
Mm-hmm. This is a hard question, so I'm going to need the exact color.
I know. I can just go, there's only so many blues. Is it sky blue?
I'm sorry, it is not. It is powder blue.
Powder blue. Oh, that was my second guess. I was like, those are, I used to be my favorite color, powder blue.
It's a good color.
It is a
Can't
good
deny
color.
That.
It's a good color. Okay, Matt, your hard question.
Mm-hmm.
In separate vocations, Skinner takes Bart to the confiscated goods room. Name 7 items, either listed or seen.
7? Okay.
You want to tell? I can give you how many there are that Skinner lists 4, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Skinner lists 5 things. Bart himself, we see him take one thing. There are additional 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 things we see. That's like...
I'm going to start on this. I may need help later.
Okay.
But there's Mad, Cracked, and Crazy.
There's 3 there's right there. There's
the plastic derriere.
That's 4.
There is the crossbow 5 that Bart picks up.
That's 5 things.
All right. I got those things. Those are the easy ones.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This is a all hard right, question. All
right. Hold on. I got to think of what Skinner said.
What did he say?
Pretty sure there's a switchblade in there, too.
There's a knife. I'll give it to you. It's a pocket knife.
Pocket knife. Okay. So one more. Oh, man. I honestly got nothing.
You're one short.
I know, but I can't think. Okay. I'm going to go with a beer.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
We got Skinner says salacious holster tops and complete collections of Mad, Cracked, an occasional issue of Crazy, fake plastic derriere. We see a girly magazine, cans of spray paint, slingshot, nunchucks, sticks of dynamite or some sort of explosive, cherry bomb, dice, studded leather wristband, pocket knife, black box with skull and crossbones on it, and, of course, the crossbow which Bart takes.
Gotta start paying more attention.
I mean, I don't know what you could possibly do.
I just gotta go through and watch all the episodes all again once I'm through watching my current slate of months of content.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. There's, you know, it's hard. So, you still gained on me. I don't know what you're even complaining about.
Because this is not so much beating you, it's beating myself, my expectations.
I could make so many jokes, but I'm not going to. if you guys have any questions you'd like to send or themes or stuff, you can send it. I opted for no theme this week, but we may have one next week. I have one in the queue. We'll move on to our final segment. It is time for best episode ever.
Best episode ever.
There it goes. Best episode ever is part of the show. Matt and I will each rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. Matt, where does this one go?
Okay, let's think about this. There were a lot of good jokes. It just overdoses on heart, essentially. The pacing was good. The B story was there. It was interesting. I didn't even really get enough of the B story, to be honest. But it wasn't distracting because it was intertwined with the main story. This was actually a really good episode. I don't know. I'm kind of thinking maybe 21, 22-ish, somewhere in that area.
That's where I was looking to.
Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song is just right there at number 21. And I'm like, this is right there with that. I'm not sure it's better than that, but it's dang close.
I think it's appropriate comparison. They're both, I think, thematically similar in the fact that, you know, the character mixed with heart, like heart and character, but humor in it. Like the what propels the episode is ultimately character based and heart based.
And it's based on the relationship between an older person and a younger person, which, you know, they're basically trying to figure out their relationship.
I would put it probably right below that. Honestly, well, I don't know. There's I Love Lisa is right below you. Is it better than I Love Lisa? I think it is.
I
think it's better than I Love Lisa. I think just structurally it's stronger than I Love Lisa. So there you go. Number 22 is Grandpa versus sexual heat inadequacy.
You can't spell it.
It's because it's hard to spell. Even I've looked at it like a dozen times this week, and it's still like I still have to think about it very clearly about before I spell it. There's number 22, right above I Love Lisa, right below Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song. Number 1 is Cape Fear, still going strong. Last place is Homer's Odyssey at 106. It will be supplanted one day. Matter of time. Will happen. What's our next episode, Matt?
Oh, got to pull up my list. Let's see. Next episode is Fear of Flying.
Interesting. Good Marge episode. Yeah, Marge episode. It's one of the classic episodes that I haven't watched a lot of, so I'm very excited to watch it again with fresh eyes. That'll be next week. You can find this list, the best episode ever list, at our website. It is thesimpsonsshow.com. You can find everything there. Links to our new episodes, downloadable, and streaming. Links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, to our Patreon. If you want to help us out, subscribe, give us, pitch in a couple dollars here and there. We really appreciate it. This list is broken down by season, segments for the Treehouse of Horror episodes, their own separate list, and, of course, overall. Everything is there. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my comic book podcast at Handsome Boys Comics Hour, handsomeboyscomicshour.com, on iTunes, etc. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That's true. However, I have decided to be working nights for the next week. So if you are some sort of criminal, you may see me because I'll be working nights and that's when most crimes take place. And to counteract the rumors, no, I am not Batman, at least not the one from this universe.
I'm not going to try.
You're not going to take the bait?
I'm not going to try and deconstruct that. Are you the Batman from Red Sun? Are you the Russian Batman?
No, I was going for Thomas Wayne from the Flashpoint universe. And the one who liked to shoot people and had the worst bat cave ever, the kind of bat cave that you and I would have.
He's kind of the worst Batman ever, Matt.
Yeah, that's kind of the point.
He's really bad. But yeah, with that, we'll call it a day. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.